But I want us to think of one text of Scripture this morning, and it's found in the book of Proverbs, chapter 27, and it's verse 7. Proverbs 27 and verse 7. And we read, "The full soul loatheth a honeycomb, but unto the hungry soul every bitter thing is sweet." The full soul loatheth the honeycomb, but to the hungry soul every bitter thing is sweet. And I want us to ask a question today as our title. What's filling up my life? What's filling up my life? When we look at that little text of Scripture, we realize that when a person's belly is full, they can afford to turn their nose up at the most tasty and the most tempting and nutritious delicacies that there are. But when a person has gone without food for some time, then even the kind of food that they wouldn't normally choose to eat suddenly becomes irresistible. And that's the straightforward understanding of this little verse. That's the observation that's being made in this old proverb. But the point is, I suppose, this, that if our full belly or our empty belly is in view, then that's the point that's really being made. That's the common denominator, a full belly or an empty belly. That's the determining factor when it comes to what we see as being satisfying. So it's not really the tastiness or the wholesomeness of the food, it's the full or the empty belly. What's filling up my life? What am I feeding on? What satisfies me? What makes me tick? Well, to help us answer some of these questions, I would like to just use a couple of illustrations, and they're really, really well known to you. But now that we're looking at this in light of this text, and we're going to use these two stories that you know so well. And the first one is a parable given by Jesus in Luke chapter 15. And Luke chapter 15, we read from verse 11 and we get the parable. Luke 15 from verse 11. And Jesus said, or he said, "A certain man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me.' And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the young son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into the fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, 'How many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him, and had compassion on him, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, Bring forth the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry." What's filling up my life? Well, what did that younger son fill his life with? Where did he look for satisfaction? Well, he certainly wasn't content with what he had. The sad thing is that he had many of the things that money can't buy, and yet he wanted more. He had a loving home life. He had youth. He had health. There's three things already. Maybe people in here would love to have their youth again and their health again, and perhaps even a loving home life. He had a father who wasn't controlling or restrictive because the father gave him what he wanted. And he had an inheritance to look forward to upon his father's death. But he developed a craving for something more. And it must have grown and intensified as he fed his desires. Perhaps he did that by listening to travelers on their way through places, people from other places, and they'd maybe be boasting about what you can do in such in a place and what they did in such in a place or what they saw happening in such a place. Exciting things that could be sampled. Eventually, his hunger for a different life took over his thoughts, became an obsession. And that obsession then just had to be pursued at any cost. He then was dissatisfied with everything that he had, and he wanted more. And he wanted more even at the cost of offending his father. Because he knew that one route to getting where he wanted to be was to demand his inheritance here and now. What an offense. He didn't have the decency to wait for his father's demise. Because his heart and thoughts were now so filled up with what he thought he could have and what he thought he was missing. And he was so obsessed with the idea of the chase that he overcame any sense of decency that he should have had towards his father. But that heart and those thoughts that filled up his imagination eventually became a reality then when he had the money. And as he made his journey to the far country, his heart and thoughts would once again be filled. They'd be filled with plans, with goals, with intentions. This is what I'm going to do first. And then, and his mind, heart, and thoughts would still be filled. Then once at his destination of choice, he would be able to start and put them into practice. The partying could begin, the socializing, hitting the club scene. Remember what we read in Luke 15. He wasted his substance with riotous living. Doesn't mean to say he was out rioting in the streets in some protest or other. It was just careless, reckless behavior, hedonism. And he spent all, he put everything into this. When eventually the older brother speaks up after his return, he adds this detail. He devoured his living with harlot sexual experimentation, promiscuity. So he's still filling up his life. And as long as his life was filled up, he had no thought back to what he had left behind in his father's house. But then things started to change. Famine came. Things started to change that are beyond our control. He began to be in want. He ran out of money. He spent all that he had. So there's a famine, no finance. He couldn't fund the lifestyle that he once had. And whoever he engaged in those practices with, they don't seem to be on the scene any longer. He joins himself to a citizen of that country. We're not sure exactly what this meant, but it may have been that he was in debt and had to go and work for nothing. But one thing we can say with certainty, he hit rock bottom. Because for a young man from a Jewish home to end up anywhere near pigs would have been a disgrace. And he's not even, it would appear, permitted to take what the pigs were eating. He would have. Suddenly, pig's will is palatable because he's hungry. What's our verse? The full soul loatheth a honeycomb, but to the hungry soul every bitter thing is sweet. From a life filled with things, stuff, people to see, places to go, to sudden emptiness. It started off with this request, Father, give me, showing his rebellion. But then, when he makes his way back, it's, Father, make me. Make me a hired servant. Submission. There's no rebellion now. What a turnaround. His attitude when full, in contrast to his attitude when empty. And his father, oh, he could have said many a thing. He could have done many a thing. In fact, if he'd listened to the older brother, he would have done many a thing. But he brings out, and here's the significance of it, the fatted calf. This is the man who's hungry. This is the man who would have taken what the pigs were eating. But his loving father brings out the fatted calf. That speaks, of course, of the father's ability to provide and to satisfy in the truest and most wholesome sense. But also, the fatted calf spoke of intention. It was something that was set apart. It was being fatted for a purpose, something special. And it's being made available to the young rebel who had nothing to pay and was not worthy. You're here today and you're not saved. That's a wonderful picture of our loving God. We're not worthy. We've nothing to pay. We haven't a leg to stand on. We can't impress God, just like this young son. And yet we come to a loving God, who has the ability to provide and provide abundantly, and who wants to lavish his goodness and his love and his care upon us, and who's willing to embrace us and take us in. Why are you not saved today? When that is the extent of the love that's offered to you. It was a gift of love, the fatted calf. There was the robe, there was the ring, there were the shoes, on it goes. But it would be the fatted calf that he would taste. And it was for him. What's our text? The full soul loatheth a honeycomb, but to the hungry soul every bitter thing is sweet. You see, when that young man was filling up his life with dreams, with aspirations, with thoughts, with plans, and then scheming, getting the money that he needed, then starting on the journey, and then fulfilling his desires in the far country, while he was filling up his life with all of that, he didn't need or feel the need of the Father's love. What's filling up my life? Here's the other illustration that came to mind, and we certainly know this story very, very well because we spent weeks in the lives of the in-laws. And of course, they were Ruth and Naomi. And in Ruth chapter 1, verse 1, we read this. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem Judah, And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. They went to escape that prospect, but they couldn't. And she was left and her two sons. And they took them wives of the woman of Moab. Now that wasn't a good idea. That was forbidden in the law. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth. And they dwelled there about 10 years. And Mahlon Chilion died also, both of them. And the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. And she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread back home. So why am I thinking about Naomi? Well, it's because of this description that she gives herself in verse 21. She said this about her journey. I went out full. You remember that? I went out full. But the Lord brought her home again empty. So how was her life filled up? Well, Elimelech, her husband, was obviously wealthy. And this becomes evident, as you remember, as we went through the story, because the extended male members of the family who survived, they stayed, they didn't go anywhere, they continued to manage Elimelech's property and affairs. And they were rich, the nearer kinsman and Boaz, rich men. So Elimelech obviously would have had that had he stayed. So she had a life where she had material things. Even maternally speaking, she had the privilege of being the mother of two boys, Mahlon and Chilion. And that was an experience considered to be a sign of great blessing in that particular period. A Jewish mother, not just a mother, but the mother to a son and the mother to two sons. And they were living in a place called Bethlehem. And the name of that, of course, means house of bread. It reflected, of course, its agricultural heritage and was known for its abundance. But spiritually speaking, Naomi was just one of many in the nation who at that time are described by this very sad verse at the end of the book of Judges. Everyone did that which was right in their own eyes. That was the prevailing attitude of Naomi's day. Isn't that a wee bit like today? Isn't that a lot like today? And then disaster strikes. Famine. Another famine. In the house of bread. And they go to Moab, and the name for Moab, translation of that name is waste or nothingness. And as we discovered in our past studies, Naomi takes responsibility for this move every bit as much as her husband. We could have blamed Elimelech and that she was just tagging on as the dutiful wife, but that's not the way Naomi saw it, because we read this: the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. The Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. The Lord hath testified against me. The Almighty has afflicted me. The Lord has brought me home again empty. And she never turned the word on that decision of God's. She agreed with it all. From full to empty. Her husband died, her two sons. She re-enters Bethlehem at the time of harvest and fullness once again. But here's the sad fact. She re-enters Bethlehem happy for her and Ruth to live off gleanings. Isn't that powerful? She went out full. She went out with a right to the fields. And she comes back happy to just live off the gleanings. The promise of the good life in Moab, well, it didn't live up to expectations, did it? Because instead of trusting God and staying where they were, as the others did, They decided to just abandon the others and sort this out themselves. Far off fields look green. Both the prodigal and Naomi were emptied before they turned. Both of them were brought to see their need when they were emptied. What's our question? What's filling up my life? Unsaved person. Here's the words of wee hymn. Room for pleasure, room for business. But for Christ the crucified, not a place that he can enter in your heart for which he died. Why are so many meetings like this not packed to the doors? So many other gospel missions and other kinds of outreaches, why are they not full? The reason is they can't compete any longer with the sheer amount of things that have prior claim on people's lives. We're living in a world of non-stop distraction and entertainment. Non-stop. If you wake up at 3 in the morning, 5 in the morning, and you're unwell or whatever it is, you put on the TV, there'll be dozens of channels to watch. You can turn on the internet. You have YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, WeChat, Telegram, Snapchat. You can go on, all of them. And some do, all day. And some all night. Freeview, Sky TV, Netflix. You can watch these things back to back and on a loop. Binge TV. Box sets. That's even without leaving the house. Then there's the clubs, bars, restaurants, gyms, entertainment zones of all kinds. Then you can enlist in classes and lessons and fill up your week with anything and everything. There's no end to electronic noise in our world. And while these things are filling up our lives, so many people then today don't feel any need for the gospel. But here's the sad thing, although I began by saying unsaved person, what about you, professing believer? If there was, well, there is, he didn't say if there was, there is a divine camera who knows everything that we did in the last week since we gathered here. But imagine if an earthly camera could show our movements this morning. And maybe show our movements when the prayer meeting was on and the Lord's table was on. Wonder what would fill up our lives. For many, it's a struggle to come for just over an hour on a Sunday morning and a whole week. Jesus said in Matthew 5 and 6, blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. That looks a wee bit like a contradiction, because how could the happy be, or how could the hungry be happy? When we think of the scenes that we sometimes see regarding droughts and famines in our world, and we see people who are hungry and the pain of hunger in their face, the hollow eyes, we certainly aren't thinking of them as being blessed or happy. But this blessedness or happiness is another way of saying that that person is in a good place, even if that place is challenging. You see, we talk about a good place as if we haven't any issues, there's nothing to stress us, I'm in a good place. But in reality, spiritually speaking, a good place will be where God can use you, where God has got your attention, where you're close to him. That's a good place. Are we in a good place today? But even that good place might be a difficult place, might be a challenging place. But if we're in touch with the Lord and He's got our attention, that's a good place. Are we in the right place today, right in God's eyes? Well, sometimes to get us there, the Lord has to put us through the mill that we will be emptied. He wants us to be empty of the flesh. He wants us to be empty of worldliness, of worldly aspirations, worldly values, worldly philosophy. And sometimes the things that come into our lives are designed to be such that we feel our emptiness and reach out to Him. Sometimes it's only then that we turn. Jesus said, "Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled." The soul that loatheth the honeycomb, that's the full soul loatheth the honeycomb, but to the hungry soul every bitter thing is sweet. Are we hungering and thirsting after righteousness? Maybe you're here and you're saying, but surely when I get saved, the righteousness of Jesus was imputed to me, and that's a once for all thing. And well, that's exactly right. But when we look at righteousness as it's presented in the scriptures, there's three tenses. There's past, present, and future. And in the past, at your conversion, you handed over your sin. It was laid upon the Lord Jesus Christ. And in its place, His righteousness was given to you. And as God looks at you eternally, you're declared to be righteous through justification by faith. But then, way in the future, we have this wonderful prospect, Revelation 19 and 9, speaking of the bride. To her was granted that she should be arrayed in fine linen, white and clean. The linen is the righteousness of the saints. That's the future expectation. Because we know that although we have this imputed righteousness, we still live in this world. And we still feel. But that's a wonderful prospect ahead. But between our conversion and that wonderful prospect, so that's the past in connection with righteousness and the future, there's the present. And we should be living lives that are right. Right in the sight of God, right in the sight of the assembly, and right in the sight of those who are watching on in the world. And that's achieved through the work of sanctification. Right living, righteous living. Psalm 42 verse 1 helps us. If we are on that journey, if we have that idea in mind, if that is our desire. As the hart, the deer, pants after the water brook, so pants my soul after thee, O God. That's one way of living that right life. Wanting Him. Satisfied by Him. Another pathway to righteous living is Psalm 19 from verse 7. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord and true are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold. Yea, the much fine gold. And this interesting little line. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is thy servant warned, and in keeping of them is great reward. A desire for God Himself, and then this desire for the Word to change us and transform us. And there's another pathway to personal righteous living. It's Ephesians 5 and 18. Be not drunk with wine wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit. Hunger and thirst after righteousness? The promise is you will be filled. Now, how can we be filled with the Spirit if our lives are filled up with other stuff? It's a simple one. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. Jesus said in John 7 are said of him, Jesus stood and cried, if any man thirst, let him come to me and drink. He that believeth on me, as the scripture has said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. This spake he of the Spirit, which they that believe on him should receive. We're living in powerless days. There's no power coming from the believer, because there's no power getting into the believer, because the believer's life's full of everything but the Spirit. What's filling up my life? If you're full, you will loathe the beautiful things God has. But if you're empty, perhaps only then will you be ready, even for his chastisement. As long as it's from him. May the Lord bless these thoughts to your hearts for his name's sake.